everyone. Welcome into the Fantasy Bros Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Sylvester, and we've got a great guest today. It's Chris Towers, senior editor at CBS Sports. He's on Twitter at CTowersCBS. I'm at Bobby Fantasy Pro. Thanks for coming to the show. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me. I just finished up our podcast, so I'm in the podcasting mood. My vocal cords are warmed up, and I'm ready to go.
Sounds great. Well, here's the plan, okay? We're going to be talking only outfielders today. So we've got 22 guys we're going to talk about. We each have, you know, three guys that we are targeting in the top 100 picks in the outfield position, three that we're targeting in the next 100 picks, and then we're each going to give five sleepers outside of the top 200 that we like quite a bit. I didn't tell you this, but we're going to do it in a countdown version. So your number three outfielder that you're targeting in the top 100 picks, then your number two, then your number one, and we'll trade off and on. So why don't you give us your number three outfield target you'd like to have in the top 100 picks first?
All right. So I kind of put them together in reverse order of ADP. So my number three is actually probably my favorite, but it's Nick Castellanos, current Fantasy Pros ADP of 99th. Overall, I think him in Cincinnati could be just, he could have an absolute monster season. You know, the batted ball profile doesn't look that dissimilar to what you've seen from JD Martinez the last couple of years. And he complained pretty openly, especially last season, about the impact that hitting at Comerica Park had on him. And, you know, if you look at the park effects, Comerica Park doesn't really have that big of an impact on right-handed power hitters, but Nick Castellanos is sort of a different breed. He hits a ton of his fly balls out to center field and to right field. So what we saw when he left Comerica Park, he was so good with the Cubs. I don't think he's going to be that good. He was like a borderline first round caliber hitter.
Yeah, he was batting .321 with in 51 games, he hit 16 homers. That's a 45-50 homer pace.
I don't think he's going to do that, but I think something like a .295 average, 34-35 homers, and 95 plus RBI is totally within the realm of possibility. I think his skill set really matches up well with the park that he's playing in. It's a bandbox in Cincinnati. There's not really those deep power alleys. I really like Nick Castellanos. He's someone that, you know, I sometimes make a mistake building my roster and filling out outfield too early, especially if it's in like a three outfielder, like Yahoo or CBS Sports points style league. But he's someone who I really want to try to get on as many teams as I can this year.
This is an interesting one. You're the first person who's brought up Castellanos so far this year. I don't know. We've had probably a dozen episodes and nobody has really said his name. And the reason why, I think, is he's one of these kind of boring guys that's been around for a while. He always tends to do the same thing. For so long, we hyped him up as, hey, I think this could be a 35 home run hitter who bats 300. And all the underlying metrics say this can happen. But you're right. Changing to Cincinnati, the great American launching pad, it is entirely possible, especially since what we saw after he got out of Detroit was spectacular. That's an interesting call around pick 100.
One of the reasons why he doesn't get a ton of love in fantasy circles, partially, like you said, is we've just been teased before. But I think a big part of it is there's such an emphasis on getting guys who can steal bases this season that those guys who, you know, even in a best case scenario, profile really as like a four category guy but won't steal many bases, they tend to get overlooked, they tend to get pushed down. And so you look at like Ramon Laureano and Luis Robert are going ahead of him, and it's pretty easy to see why. Both those guys could easily steal, you know, 20 bases, and in Robert's case, you know, there's the potential for so much more. But I really love what Castellanos can do with the bat, and I think batting average is almost as hard to find as stolen bases, but it's not necessarily treated that way, and he could be a real help in batting average.
I think that's a good way to put it. He's also going to contribute from the run perspective as well, especially being in that dangerous Reds lineup that could very well win the National League Central. And I want to mention this as well. We talk about the ADP at 99. What's his ECR? ECR, by the way, is expert consensus ranking. So we've got 50 plus analysts who have submitted their rankings for the Fantasy Pros accuracy competition that we grade at the end of the year. And we combine all their rankings together for an expert consensus. And Nick Castellanos is a full 13 spots higher at number 86 overall. So the experts in the industry are recommending drafting Castellanos a full round higher. That's pretty rare in the top 100 picks, which means, I mean, it should tell you everything you need to know. This is a good value at pick 99. I like the call a lot. All right, here is my first one. And you just mentioned him. I like Luis Robert a little bit more than Castellanos. In fact, I've been talking about him quite a bit, and I just put my money where my mouth is in the great Fantasy Baseball Invitational run by Justin Mason, where a bunch of experts come together and we do all these drafts together. I grabbed Robert at pick number 74. I know it seemed a little bit early, but I wasn't taking a chance that he didn't make it back to me, because this is somebody with legitimate 30-30 potential right away, and everyone's worried about the strikeouts, everyone's worried about the batting averages. If you look at the strikeouts in the minor leagues compared to Fernando Tatis, who's going in the second round, right? Robert has a little bit more power, maybe a little bit less speed than Tatis, but the strikeouts are less of a concern than they were for Tatis. And Tatis still struck out a ton last year. He was fine. Now the 410 BABIP helped with that. I'm not saying Robert's going to bat 300 like Tatis did last year, but Robert also has a batting average 30 points higher over their entire minor league career than Tatis. This is a better prospect than Tatis. Again, more power, a little bit less speed, and he's going 80 picks later.
The one thing that trips me up with Luis Robert is you look at what Tim Anderson did in the minors. He averaged 54 stolen base attempts per 150 games in the minors. He's at 24 in the majors. Yoan Moncada was at 74 steals per 150 games. He's at 16 in the majors. And so Luis Robert, Nick Madrigal is the other guy.
That's not cool. They need to stop screwing with us. Yeah, Madrigal as well. Yes.
That's the other guy I looked at. I did this analysis on Twitter a couple days ago. Luis Robert was at 59 stolen base attempts per 150. Nick Madrigal was at 55 per 150. But the other thing to keep in mind is both Luis Robert and Nick Madrigal were less efficient base stealers than Nick Anderson and Yoan Moncada. And I'm a big Yoan Moncada guy, and part of that is there's no reason he couldn't steal 30-plus bases, except that the White Sox just don't seem to want him to. And so that's the thing that I've been struggling with all these White Sox guys is, like, Tim Anderson could easily be a 20-homer, 30-steal guy. They've got four guys who could be in their opening day lineup and could easily steal 30 bases. I don't know if any of them actually will. That's my concern. It doesn't seem to be a big priority for them, and I'm not sure that's going to change in a year where their lineup is expected to be better than it has been, you know, in any of those guys' careers.
I think that's entirely fair. There's a lot of upside here. There's a little bit of risk as well. What do you think his batting average is going to end up being? Because everyone's so worried about these strikeouts. Our consensus projections have him at 265. I mean, this is somebody who batted 330 in the minor leagues last year.
I think the most likely outcome is probably something like 265, 270. But, you know, one thing that we've seen over the last couple of years is, you know, potentially more of those BABIP outliers than you're typically used to, and I'm not sure exactly why. Maybe it's the livelier ball. Maybe it's just a combination of guys with power and speed who can
hit. Like Javi Baez, he hits the ball so dang hard.
Yoan Moncada is a great example of someone who had he's not going to have a 415 BABIP again, but
maybe 350 is repeatable.
Yeah, I think his career is like 360. And so if Luis Robert is that kind of guy, then that's when you start talking about, okay, he could hit 290. And then it gets...
I'm certainly not expecting that as, what is he, 21, 22 years old? He just turned 22. But regardless, I think he'll contribute in all five categories with a lot of upside as well. I wouldn't mind getting both him and Castellanos.
You definitely could. It would require you probably reaching relative to ADP on one or the other, but that could be a good combination if you, especially if you don't have an outfielder yet and you want to get guys with big potential, who could be, you know, that's two guys we could be talking about as top 50 overall picks in a year.
Sure, I totally agree with that. And there's guys like you mentioned, Laureano, Victor Robles going ahead of him, Marcell Ozuna with the shoulder problems, Tommy Pham with all kinds of injury problems. I would rather just wait a couple rounds and get these guys.
Yeah, I tend to not draft outfielders in the kind of two or three rounds ahead of them. You know, I like Jorge Soler, but you know, I think Joey Gallo is probably going a little higher than I'm comfortable with this year. I haven't drafted Tommy Pham. I don't think I've drafted Eddie Rosario ever in any league, which...
Oh, I like Rosario at his price. That's where I want to get pitchers, right? That's where you can get Tyler Glass now, Chris Paddock, Zach Greinke. Give me two of those guys at the turn.
Exactly.
You know, you mentioned another guy that I just took in TGFBI, Joey Gallo, and I actually hadn't noticed him because we're doing the draft over on NFBC, and the rankings are just a little bit different than they are on Yahoo and ESPN, so some of these guys kind of slip under the radar and you don't notice them. But I was using our draft assistant at fantasypros.com/draftwizard. You guys can check it out. So you guys have done the simulation software on Draft Wizard. it's the same interface. It's super easy to use. We've got all kinds of things built in, like the pick predictor, which is going to show you what the chances are that somebody's going to make it to the next round. And so it was telling me Joey Gallo might not be there for the next round. I think it was like a 40% chance he was off the board. And I didn't really want to take a chance based on what was still available for me. So I synced it up. It is really cool when you can sync it with your live draft. You've basically got a team of experts in your back pocket. You can go into your war room and you can see who the experts are recommending for the pick. You guys are going to love it. Check it out at fantasypros.com/draftwizard. All right, let's move on to your number two outfielder within the top 100 picks that you're targeting, Chris.
Yeah, moving up about 50 spots, it's Giancarlo Stanton. And
oh, man, that was my number two. All right.
100% understand why Giancarlo Stanton is being pushed down draft boards. I get it. Last year was just an outright disaster. I think he had a knee injury. His season ended with a quad injury in the playoffs, and he had something else before that, a bicep strain. I get it. Giancarlo Stanton can't stay healthy. Except he didn't miss a single game in 2017 or 2018 as a result of injuries. Not a single game with like a sore ankle or anything. You go to prosportstransactions.com, it's actually a really great site, and you can look up games missed due to injury, time on the IL for any player and in any sport. It's a great site. And I think he missed six games total. It was all just rest games. And he was the number 24 hitter in 2018. And I think number two or three in 2017.
That's right. And he did it in Miami, the worst park for right-handed hitters. And now he's in New York, a top three park for right-handed hitters.
And 2018 was disappointing relative to that 2017 season. And yet he was still the number 24 overall player. I think he was the number 20 hitter. He had 38 homers, 100 RBI. Last season was awful, but there wasn't really, you know, we only had 36 batted balls tracked by StatCast. But there was no sign of a physical decline. Average exit velocity, 92 miles per hour, 25% barrel rate. Like, all indicators suggested that he was still an elite batted ball guy. Now, he's never going to strike out 24% of the time like he did in 2017 again, but we know the upside is 50 homers. We know that is probably the best lineup in baseball. If it's not, it's no worse than number three or four, and it's a great park. So I look at it all, and if the only knock against a guy, and this is one of my philosophies, if the only knock against a player is they can't stay healthy, I'm much more likely to draft that guy than the consensus.
Especially when it's not like a lingering injury like Aaron Judge, who's missed 50-plus games in two consecutive years. Because Aaron Judge is going almost two rounds higher than Giancarlo Stanton. I think Stanton's the better baseball player and less likely to be hurt.
Yeah, I could go either way on them. I think, you know, there's the potential that Judge might steal 13 bases or so, which, you know, maybe puts him over.
And he's going to get a lot of runs because he walks so much.
But I don't think there's a gap necessarily. And Judge is already missing time in spring training with shoulder soreness, which is the same injury that has caused him to miss time, I think, going back to his rookie season. And so I think it's fair to wonder. I tweeted this earlier, actually. I think it's fair to wonder if guys like Judge, Stanton, Joey Gallo, Miguel Sano, these guys who weigh like 250-plus pounds, whether they are physically built to hold up to a sport like baseball where they play every day, as opposed to football, which is a much more dangerous sport, but you do at least get a week off. You know, I think it's fair to wonder that.
These guys are athletes and everything, but the thing is, running out there 162 games a year, we used to put these big guys at first base, and maybe it's because they weren't as athletic, but why don't you just take it easy on their bodies?
And that's one thing with Stanton, is it does look like he's going to play primarily DH this year. And so that hopefully helps him avoid some of those nagging injuries.
So let me give you some names, okay? You tell me if you would rather have him than any of these guys who are going ahead of him in ADP. Whit Merrifield.
That's so dependent on how I'm building my team. But I think so, because there's no guarantee Merrifield gets back to being an elite steal guy.
I'd rather have Stanton. I'd rather have Stanton than Merrifield, Chris Bryant.
Yeah.
Ketel Marte. Austin Meadows is going at 10 picks ahead of him. Starling Marte going 20 picks ahead of him. I'd still rather have Stanton.
I mean, Starling Marte, if you look at... Yeah, I'm actually not in TGFBI, and I missed the sign-up. I don't know how that happened. I was in the previous 2 years, and I just... It got lost, and I feel horrible that I'm not in it, and it was really fun to take part. So it's not that I didn't want to be in. I'm just incompetent. But what I've seen in it with Starling Marte is he's 31st in the Fantasy Pros average. I haven't seen what his TGFBI average is, but I would guess it's at least 10 spots higher. It seems like he's going in the second round in every draft. And I know he went 13th overall. I know Todd Zola took him 13th overall in one league, which is, it's really interesting.
Zola's really smart, man. I mean,
yeah, like that's one of those things where it's like, well, he must know something I don't.
I don't know what it is. Whatever, I'm gonna DM him and figure out what's going on here, because I'm not seeing. I mean, he's a good player, but I would rather have Giancarlo Stanton and the possibility that he hits 65 homers. And if you think that that's not going to happen, he hit 59 in Miami, guys. It's definitely possible. 70's possible in New York.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think
possible, like 90th percentile.
But if you look at, if you're just talking about the 50th percentile outcome, his homer total is probably higher than anyone else's.
Yeah, I would agree. Him or Joey Gallo, it's probably one of those two. Let's move on to my new number two. I was going to go with Stanton. I'm actually going to go with Juan Soto. And you're like, well, how can you target this guy? Like, isn't it just wherever you fall in the first round, you just take the best value available? Well, his ADP is number 10. I'd take him number 5 overall after Yelich is my number 1, Acuna, Trout, Bellinger. And I'm taking Juan Soto at number 5, ahead of the shortstops, ahead of Gerrit Cole, ahead of Mookie Betts. You look at what Soto did last year as just a kid. It was very similar to Mookie Betts. Soto hit 5 extra homers. He stole 4 fewer bases. His batting average was 10 points lower. Juan Soto walks so much. He drove in 30 extra runs. They were the same player, and Soto's younger. He's only going to get better.
My only thing, and I love Juan Soto as a player, I don't know if I've drafted him this year, and it's always just because there's someone who likes him a little more than I do. And
it's me.
Yeah, and it is not at all that I don't think he can do all those things. I struggle a little bit with younger players and then just projecting linear improvement every year, because it doesn't always work that way. Sometimes it does. Sometimes, and Juan Soto is the kind of generational talent where that might happen. Like, Juan Soto probably has like a 60% chance right now of being a Hall of Fame.
That's incredible to say for a 22-year-old, but you're right.
I mean, if you look at just the amount, the guys who have had as much playing time as he has before turning 21, I think it's like at least half of them are Hall of Famers, and the other are like
Mickey Mantle, Eddie Matthews, Albert Pujols. Yeah.
I think he's second in home runs. I think the entire list of guys with more home runs before turning 21 is Mel Ott. And so we're talking about just absolutely rarefied air for someone to be this young, as good as he is. I think the question for me is the stolen bases. Does he have, he realistically could steal 20 bases. I think he's physically capable of that. Is it something that they're going to let him do? Is 12 the ceiling? He only ran 13 times. That's one of the things, is that, you know, he stole 12 bases and was only caught once. Does that turn into 20 stolen base attempts next year? Or is it 10? That's the thing for me. Stolen bases are so hard to predict from one year to the next, and he hadn't really showed that skill before last season.
I'm looking at Mel Ott right now, man. That's actually a really good comp. I mean, this guy hit 30 homers every year, batting over 300. He walked an absolute ton. He had a great career, and a lot of people don't realize he was built kind of like Jose Altuve, maybe a little bit bigger. He was this little guy who just mashed.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I said Juan Soto. I would take him at number 5. Let's move on to your number 1, and then we'll move outside the top 100 picks after I give my number 1.
Yeah, and this is probably, it's a guy that I like more than maybe anyone in the industry except Scott White, who I do the podcast with, and that's Ketel Marte. And you mentioned that you'd rather have Stanton than him. I might too, but I also look at Ketel Marte, and
he was amazing. He was better than Mookie Betts and Juan Soto.
He was so good last year, and I put together my bust list last week, and the way I did it was I basically wrote down like my rules when I'm looking for busts, of trying to find guys who fit certain categories. And one of them was, don't pay face value for career years. And Ketel Marte is one of the biggest outliers in the sport based on what he did prior to 2019. The only thing is, you're not paying face value for him. He's 44th overall right now.
If you were paying face value, he'd be going in the first round. Yeah, he's a fourth round pick.
And so he's someone who, there was no expectation coming up through the minors that he'd be this kind of hitter. He was actually someone who I liked quite a bit when he made his debut, but it was more the potential to be an on-base machine who stole a lot of bases.
Right. Where did this guy come from?
But there were signs of him being, of him having really good batted ball potential, but not necessarily the results.
His barrel rate doubled last year. His launch angle went from 5 degrees to 12 degrees last year. He just totally changed into a different hitter.
But it was intentional. You know, he actually, I think he was a swing, him and Josh Bell actually both, I remember, were kind of delayed swing change guys. I think they both talked before 2018 about changing their swings. And in Ketel Marte's case, you actually saw it from June 1st on in 2018. He hit 285 with an 877 OPS. He wasn't as good.
Did you know this then? You should have told me to draft him last year.
I actually did draft him in a number of spots as a late round pick. And, you know, the 162 game pace was not anywhere close to what he did last season. It was 285, 82 runs, 21 homers, 74 RBI, and 15 steals. But if he does that, he's probably not worth the 44th overall pick, but that's not getting into what the upside is, which is what we saw last year.
Here's my problem with Ketel Marte. And my listeners, if they've been listening for the past month, they remember this time last month, this was one player I was more excited about at ADP than virtually anybody. Now, I've cooled off a little bit just because when you look at his BABIP, it was extraordinarily high. When you look at On Baseball Savant, his expected statistics, he batted 329. His expected batting average was 299. He had a 592 slugging percentage. His expected slugging percentage was 521. So his expected WOBA is 370. That's 31st best in baseball behind guys like Justin Turner, Mitch Garver, Kyle Schwarber, JD Davis. And I get it. He was very good. But I think that's more of the baseline than the 329 batting average. So do I think he's going to regress? Yeah, but I don't think he's going to regress from that 329 backward. I think maybe from that 299 backward.
It's possible. I look at it and I say, if he hits 290.
If he hits 290 with 25 homers and a dozen steals, that's still a good player in the fourth round. I'm not going to disagree. Not at all. I'm just saying I'd rather have Stanton.
No, that's totally fair. And it's also totally possible he goes backwards from there.
Like Jonathan Villar, when he was a top five fantasy player one year, and then the next year I drafted him everywhere and he just pooped in his pants. But I don't think Marte is going to do that. This is a very good baseball player.
Yeah, and I think the skill set's a little more stable than VR's.
Agree with that. All right, here's my next one. And you can call him an outfielder if you want. You can call him a DH if you want. It's Jordan Alvarez. Maybe the best hitter in baseball last year. Now, I get it. It was a 350 plate appearance sample size. I don't think that keeps up over a full season. But we've talked about him time and time again, so I'm not going to, you know, get into it too far. ADP 38. ECR 27, another guy, a full round higher. In fact, there is no other outfielder who's more than 8 picks higher. And it's Giancarlo Stanton in the top 50 picks. So I think Alvarez is an extraordinary value. Everything in his underlying metrics say that this was legitimate. I think he bats 290 to 300 this year. I think he hits 40 homers. And in that Astros lineup, you can say what you want about the Astros. They're going to be good again. He's going to drive in 110 runs.
Yeah, I really don't have any concerns about the Astros. I know that makes me it could make me a dupe, and I think cynicism is certainly warranted, but I don't know.
They were all top prospects when they came up. Like, what did we expect? They're great.
Right. Like, maybe they take a 5% step back and they're still the fifth best lineup in baseball. I think.
Well, they added Kyle Tucker, so fifth would move up to like first because he's the greatest. I love Kyle Tucker. Oh, we're going to talk about him a little bit, actually.
Oh, we're definitely going to talk about him, it sounds like. Yeah, I did the FSGA draft back in, this was like mid-January, so it was right when, I think like the draft happened to be the day that the buzzer allegations started coming out.
Oh, boy.
And I ended up with Tucker, Springer, Correa, and Bregman. And it was all just because I think Bregman was the only guy. I took him like 10th overall, and everyone else was just like Springer was like 55th overall or something. Correa was like in the 90s. And so it was just like, well, if nobody else is going to take them, they're not going to just forget how to hit.
Right. And who knows if the allegations are all true. You know what I mean? Like maybe Altuve actually wasn't cheating. I have my own opinion about it, but there's a chance that he still bets 330 this year.
And the evidence that we have is kind of mixed about the impact that it had.
Right.
You know, like there was the guy who went through and tracked as many of the bangs as he could find. And, you know, it's incomplete information by necessity because some of the signs were no bangs meant a certain pitch was coming. So we don't know we will never have full information, but the impact didn't seem it made them strike out less and it made them swing at fewer pitches outside of the strike zone. But the overall results weren't like earth-shatteringly great.
And Altuve was a lot better on the road.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on outside the top 100 picks, and you'll start us off again. Who's your third favorite outside the top between picks 101 and 200?
I guess I'll go with a guy who doesn't have a team, which is kind of a dumb thing to do, but Yasiel Puig. I always like Yasiel Puig.
Where is he going to sign?
I don't know. That's part of the issue. If it's actually Colorado, like the rumors were earlier this week, God, he might need to be a top 60 player.
Right.
He could hit 300 in Coors Field with, I mean, he's already...
with 30 homers, 35 homers, 20 steals.
He's been, over the last three seasons, despite only averaging 542 plate appearances, which is a low number, he's at 25 homers and 16 steals while hitting 265. You put it up to 162 game pace, and it's 29 homers and 19 steals. If that's all he does next year and you get him at 130th overall, that's great value.
That's where he's going right now?
Yeah, and so...
oh, that's stupid.
You know, he doesn't have a team. That's the biggest thing.
He's going to, though. Like, there's no way he's not going to be signed.
Hopefully. I don't want to imagine a world in which Yasiel Puig's not playing every day. I hope we don't have to see that world. But, you know, there's not a lot of smoke right now. And the Rockies actually reportedly came out and kind of put some water on the embers of that rumor. So it's a concern right now. But if you talk about upside, you know, 10th, 11th round, there aren't a ton of guys who have more upside than Yasiel Puig.
Right. This is another guy I'd rather have than Ramon Laureano, who's going 30 picks higher. A couple other names, Michael Conforto, Trey Mancini, Andrew Benintendi, Oscar Mercado. I'd rather have Puig than all those guys.
Yeah, I think I would too.
I'm going to go with a very boring player. Now, this is another guy we've talked about a fair amount lately, but Andrew McCutchen has always been so good every single time that he's healthy. And guess what? He's always been healthy except for last year. This is a guy who's going to hit 20-plus homers, steal a dozen-plus bags, bat 255 to 270, get a bunch of runs, several RBIs in that Phillies lineup, and he's going to pick 190. This is another guy, ECR 171, two full rounds higher. What do you think about McCutchen at that price?
We were just talking about him on our podcast, and yeah, he's someone who I think I like more in an OBP league or a points league than I do a traditional roto, but he's going to get on base a lot at the top of what hopefully it was kind of a disappointing lineup. I really thought it was going to be one of the best in the National League, and it was actually one of the worst, that Phillies lineup last year. But did they not get the juiced balls? I don't know what happened with the Phillies last year. It seemed like everybody, except kind of ironically, maybe Bryce Harper, was a disappointment. But I think you'll get a better full JT Realmuto season. I think you'll get a better season out of Rhys Hoskins. He's kind of reworked his batting stance and his swing. And
Scott Kingery, I think, is going to be better as well.
He is almost, he was almost one of my players who I love. I didn't quite go with him, but I think Scott Kingery is one of the better 2020 bets, especially outside of the top 150. So
he's one of my top 10 overall targets. So if I would have considered him just an outfielder, heck yeah, I would have put Kingery on this list.
Yeah. And so I think that lineup's going to be better all the way around, and McCutchen should score a decent amount of runs.
Sure. All right, let's move on to your number two then.
Let's just talk about Kyle Tucker.
All right, I don't want to wait any longer. I'm cool with that.
One thing that I've started to keep in mind when I talk about young players and prospects is how excited is the organization that has them to get them in their everyday lineup. You know, there's been evidence, I think The Ringer did a really good survey on the, or study on this a couple years ago, that top prospects who get traded perform worse than top prospects who make the majors with their original team. And it makes sense. The original team knows more about them than anyone else. If they are souring on them, that's probably a sign. And in Kyle Tucker's case, it does sort of seem as if the Houston Astros organization has soured on him a little bit. And he did have a down year in 2019 at Triple A.
He had a 909 OPS with 34 homers and 30 steals in 125 games.
Yeah.
So if that's a down year, how good could he be?
And you add in what he did in the majors total, it's 38 homers, 35 steals. That's he actually did come up last year, played pretty regularly, and held his own. You know, he only hit 270, but four homers, five steals in 22 games. That's the kind of pace you should expect from a player of this talent level. It's still a question of whether he's going to play every day.
He better. I'll be more mad at the Astros if they don't play Kyle Tucker than I am about them cheating.
They've started to use him at first base, it sounds like, a little bit. We know he can play the outfield, and so it is starting to sound like, you know, Jeff Luhnow and AJ Hinch are out. We did a Sunday afternoon video show on CBS Sports HQ last year, and Jim Bowden was part of it. And one of the things he said during that was that it sounded like management, and specifically Hinch, had sort of soured on Kyle Tucker a little bit for non-baseball reasons. Well, those guys aren't there anymore.
Maybe he didn't want to cheat.
Maybe it helps him get an opportunity that he might not have otherwise had. So anytime you can get a guy, you know, is Luis Robert a better prospect than Kyle Tucker? Probably.
It's close. It's really close. They're the same type of player.
And, like, I think we're just seeing some prospect fatigue with Kyle Tucker.
Right. Yeah, if he's still qualified as a prospect, he'd be in the top five prospects without a question, right?
Yeah, I guess he doesn't quite qualify anymore. I think he's at 144 career plate appearances, so he just passed it.
So let me ask you this. If you knew Kyle Tucker was going to play, would you rather have him or Andrew Benintendi, who's going 80 picks higher?
Tucker.
Yeah, it's not even close for me either. It's Tucker. I've actually got Tucker higher in my rankings, not knowing if he's going to play. Because if Tucker was going to play, I mean, where would I move him to? About Tommy Pham range? He's about the same as Tommy Pham, right?
Yeah, I think he'd probably deserve to be around the top 100.
Man, yeah, I think this is going to be a great value. I have a really hard time believing that after what he did in AAA the last 2 years, they're going to keep him there for a third year.
Yeah, no, I think he's got to start playing. And he's still really young is the thing. It's not like, you know, he was a 22-year-old who made it to AA. He was 19 when he was in AA. He just turned 23 in January. So he's still very young. So everything that he did in the minors, he was at a fairly young level, which makes it even more impressive.
Do you remember Ron Say, who played for the Dodgers? They called him the Penguin. So my dad was pointing out that Willie Calhoun, when you see him in person, looks like he's built like a penguin. He's 5'8", 190 pounds, like a fire hydrant, and the dude has the loudest bat. I mean, he hit 21 homers last year in 309 at-bats. He played half a season, hit 21 bombs with 51 runs, 48 RBIs. The batting average wasn't bad either at 270. How's this guy going so underrated? He's gonna play every day.
I don't know what it is about him. He's another one who there's definitely some prospect fatigue with him in the fantasy space. He was with the Dodgers. Maybe there's some concern that, you know, whatever the Dodgers didn't quite see in him.
Well, they had so much outfield depth, right? It was like Verdugo. They didn't have a spot for him, so you might as well trade him.
Exactly. And all he's done is hit in the minors. You know, 873 OPS, 297 average in his AAA career. Came up in the majors and hit last year. He's not going to strike out much. He's not going to hit for the kind of batting average you would hope for from a guy who strikes out as rarely as he does. You know, he might not strike out 100 times next year, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to hit 290, which is kind of what you would hope for. But, like, he's probably going to hit 270. He's not going to hurt you in batting average. He could hit 280, 285. And, yeah, the power is great. And also, he's just so much fun to watch.
He's always got a huge smile on his face, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. And one of my things I love about baseball, that there are guys who don't necessarily look like professional athletes who can be great. And I refer to them as my big beefy baseball boys. And Willie Calhoun, he actually lost weight last year. And part of the issue with him was he was so bad defensively that it was hard to justify getting his bat in.
Maybe that's why the Dodgers traded him, is because they just figured he had to be a DH. I remember those rumors when he was a prospect that he just didn't have a position.
But he lost weight, and I don't know if he'll ever be good defensively, but I didn't get the sense that he was unplayable. And that's enough. Like, that's all he has to be, is good enough to be out there.
So he went from 21 homers in half a season. How many do you think he hits this year?
I think 35 is a good number.
Okay, that would be awesome. I'd love to get 35 at, let's see, he's pick number 172 in ADP, another guy. ECR is much higher on him than ADP. So let's move on to your number one and picks 101 through 200, and then we'll move on to our sleepers. Who do you have, Chris?
I love Framer Reyes.
Yeah, baby. How could you not?
He crushes the ball. You talk about a guy who hits the ball hard. He is one of the hardest hitters in baseball last year. He was in the top 1 percentile in exit velocity. He was in the top 6 percentile in barrel rate, top 2% in hard hit percentage. He just crushes the ball now.
And let's not forget, he was in San Diego for half the season last year, so that killed his numbers.
Yeah, he is a legitimate 40-homer potential guy. There are some contact concerns. I hope he could, you know, he showed signs of improving that in the second half of his rookie season. It wasn't as much of an issue in the minors. So I'm hopeful that he could hit 260. And if he does that and hits 40 plus homers, and he was at 37 and only 548 plate appearances last year, he's going to play every day. The Indians do not have the same kind of crowded outfield that San Diego did. So he's going to play every day.
He's a 260 hitter through 833 trips to the plate in the majors so far. And if you look at his expected statistics on Baseball Savant, he batted 249 last year. His expected batting average, 264. He was unlucky.
I'm not sure there's much of a difference between him and, you know, different positions, but Miguel Sano, who's going about 20 spots ahead of him, I think he's not that different from Joey Gallo, who I do like a lot, but I think is probably more likely to be a drain on your batting average than he was last year.
Or Max Kepler. Max Kepler is a 35-homer hitter with a 250 batting average. What's the difference here?
I'm not sure there's a huge difference between Framil Reyes and Matt Olson, who's going 60 or 70. And the industry loves Matt Olson, and I get it. And there are reasons to like Matt Olson more. I'm not saying Framil Reyes should go ahead of him. You know, Framil Reyes doesn't have quite the fly ball rate that we want from a 40-homer guy. He really does rely a lot on raw power. The average launch angle is a little bit lower than some of the really big power hitters. But it's also a case where if he gets that launch angle from like 9.5 degrees to 12 degrees, now you're talking 45, 50 homers is within the realm of possibility.
So I'm looking at these two guys right now. Matt Olson, per 162 games in his major league career, 40 homers. Framil Reyes, 36 homers. And again, he was in San Diego and now he's in Cleveland. Big difference there. Here's my third guy. And this one is, like Andrew McCutchen, not very exciting. Lorenzo Cain. How good has he been for so long? And then last year he has a little bit of a down year. I'd be willing to wager he bats 290 this year with 25 steals.
Yep. He was absolutely one of my candidates for this. And I think I had him on there before I might have taken him out to put Kyle Tucker in. I really like Lorenzo Cain. He's just a consistent hitter every season before last year. And he dealt with a wrist injury last year that he was able to play through. But
301, 307, 287, 300, 308, and then last year 260. But he steals 20 bases every year, 25, 30.
Yep, I think there's 15 homer upside and probably 30 steal upside with a 300 average. And it's a great park. It's a great lineup. We know that. If all he does is goes back to 2018, he's a steal at his current price.
You're exactly right. And man, they added my guys, Justin Smoke and Avisail Garcia. I'm so pumped for both of them. And this sucks as a Cardinals fan, right? I don't want the Brewers to get better, but they made some awesome moves. Picked up Navarro as the catcher as well to replace Grandal. Obviously, that's not going to help in the pitching framing category, but it's another good bat. The Brewers are going to be great this year.
Yeah, no, that's something the pitching side, I don't think has gotten talked about enough. Losing Grandal, replacing him with Narvaez. You know, they've got like a Brandon Woodruff, who a lot of people really like. I'm worried he could take a step back, but...
Oh, I do. Yeah, I don't like him at ADP. His ADP is so bad.
Yep, don't like it. Give me one good breaking ball from Brandon Woodruff, and then I'll buy
sure.
It.
All right, let's go to sleepers. We're each going to do five of them. This will be a countdown again. So these are players being drafted outside the top 200 picks. I already named one of mine. Actually, I named my number one guy. Who do you have for us?
Ian Happ.
Oh, wow. I forgot all about him. Is he going to play this year?
I think so. I think the center field battle is between him and Albert Almora. And, you know, Almora is a guy who had prospect pedigree, really good defensive player, just cannot hit. Reworked his swing last year,
He can hit lefties.
Yeah, and he reworked his swing last year, and it was terrible. He reworked his swing again this offseason. We'll see if it yields better results. But you know, Ian Happ, for his career, has averaged 26 homers and 9 steals per 162 games. And that's largely as, you know, long stretches in 2018 and 2019 not playing every day.
Oh, man, he hit 11 homers last year in 140 at-bats?
Yep, and he was really good in AAA. Like, he started to figure out some of the issues that he had. I think, you know, he had 27 homers between the majors and minors. The batting average still was in, like, the 250 range, but started to get the strikeout rate at least a little bit in control. It wasn't quite as bad as it was in 2018. So I think Ian Happ has the potential to be, you know, a 25 homer, maybe 30 homer, 10 steal guy who hits 260. And that, you know, there aren't a ton of guys who give you that kind of power and speed.
I'll tell you what, Chris, this is a really good name. And every once in a while when we're doing these episodes, I'm adjusting my rankings as we're going. And that's why we have these conversations, is to figure out, you know, am I missing something? I want to get a different perspective and hear what the other experts in the industry have to say. And oh man, you just convinced me on Ian Happ. I'm moving him way up in my rankings. Great call. Tyler O'Neill, if he wins the job in St. Louis, they didn't sign Marcell Ozuna. They're talking like Dylan Carlson's not ready to come up, even though we all know that he is. Lane Thomas is there. Are they really going to give Lane Thomas the job over Tyler O'Neill? No, I think Tyler O'Neill's going to start. And this is a guy that throughout his major league career, yeah, okay, he strikes out a lot. He's really streaky, but much like Marcell Ozuna, over a full season, that's going to turn into a 30-homer guy.
I mean, just what he's done in AAA, 30 homers could be underselling it. He's hit 70.
Sure, yeah. He could steal a dozen bases as well.
Yeah, he's hit 68 homers in 235 games at AAA, and I think there's definitely some concern that he might be a quad A guy, you know, a guy who crushes it in AAA and just is overmatched, and that's the kind of profile that might be overmatched. He swings and misses way too much. He's got big holes in his game. He swings out of his shoes, but
he's also the strongest man alive.
He's got big old guns. I think, you know, 35 to 40 homers and 15 steals is not entirely out of the question there. He has the athleticism for it.
All right, so let's see here. I want to get the ADPs on both these guys, okay? So Ian Happ right now, his ADP is 360 overall, 30th round. So he's very likely available in your leagues if you already drafted. Tyler O'Neill is probably the same type of thing, 380. Yeah, so both these guys are available, and both of them have plenty of upside if they make the starting lineup out of spring training. And these are the types of guys I'd like to draft because, I mean, you know what? If they don't make the starting lineup, guess what? You can go still pick up that Marwin Gonzalez or Nico Goodrum off the waiver wire. Like, what difference does it make if you draft them? David Fletcher, right? ADP 264. I'd rather go for the upside, and if it works out, great. And if not, you just drop him and pick up the same guy you would have drafted anyway.
Yeah, there's no downside there.
All right, who do you have at number four?
One thing I like about guys who play for the Rockies is in this offensive environment, one of the things you really have to keep focus on is guys who play in the PCL and put up huge numbers there. You kind of have to write it off.
It's like a whole league of Coors Field.
Unless, yeah, but if they're going to play in Coors Field, like Sam Hilliard is.
Yes.
He had a ridiculous 2019 season between the majors and the minors. It was 153 games between Albuquerque and Colorado. He hit 42 homers and stole 24 bases. I mean, that is... He was 25 years old, so he was old for AAA. That's a red flag. It was in the PCL. They were playing with the juiced balls that they use in the majors. That's a red flag. Except if he gets an everyday job with the Rockies, he's going to be playing in Coors Field half the time. So all of those things that you have to write off, you might not actually have to write them off that much. There is, you know, he's not going to hit 40 homers.
It's a great name. This is a better name than the last two guys in terms of if he makes the lineup, you definitely want to have him. But this was Ryan McMahon last year. This was Garrett Hampson last year. And the Rockies just keep screwing us over.
That's the problem, is you cannot rely on the Rockies to do the right thing. I do view them a little positively just because last year, towards the end of the season, they started using Ian Desmond just as a platoon bat. So hopefully they're starting to wise up a little bit. Hopefully they're starting to feel the fire on their feet with Nolan Arenado basically requesting a trade before backing off of it. So, you know, if that stuff does actually push them to make good decisions, hopefully that means Sam Hilliard and Garrett Hampson, who was another guy I was going to say, can get something. Like they've got too many guys, which is a weird thing to say about a bad team, but they've got too many guys. So we'll see. But if he does play every day, Sam Hilliard could be a rare power speed threat.
All right, so here's what I'm going to do, because I've talked about these guys that I'm about to name so much that I think all of my listeners already know why I like them. I'm just going to name my 2, 3, and 4. In fact, I'm going to throw in an extra name as well, because I love all these sleepers. We don't need to talk about them at all, but if you have anything to say about any of them, that's great. And then we'll go on to your number 3 and your number 2, and we'll both give our number 1s. So I want to talk Gregory Polanco, Ryan Braun, Justin Upton, and Chris Davis, whose ADP is just ridiculous. But Chris Davis and Justin Upton, I mean, you're getting, what, 75 homers between the two of them in like the last couple of rounds? Ryan Braun, every year, he bats 290 with 20 homers and 10 stolen bases. Yeah, he's not going to play every day, but that's still really great production. And then Gregory Polanco, who was he before he got hurt? And he still has a lot of upside for more as well. I also like David Peralta. Do you want to talk about any of those 5 players?
Polanco's a guy I really thought about putting on my list. He's another guy I thought about putting on. I wrote a bounce backs column for 2017, wrote about a bunch of candidates and tried to rank them based on how likely they are. He didn't quite make the cut just because I needed to pull someone off the list, but you know, he was another guy who was reworking his swing. I really, really liked him coming into last season, and then it was just the shoulder was never healthy. It sounds like it could still be a concern, so that's my only thing is shoulders can take a long time and they can sap power, but there's speed, there's power, there's batting average potential there. He really could be a legitimate 5 category guy if he's healthy. So you don't have to, you know, he's probably going off the board on average after your last pick, 297 overall. So I really like him. Ryan Braun, another guy not on my list, but he was on my sleepers list as just, if you're in a season-long roto or if you're in a daily lineups league, Ryan Braun should be on your team because he's going to give you 20 homers. He's going to steal 12 bases and he's going to help you in batting average. He's just a valuable player. And then you mentioned Justin Upton. He was on my list of guys I like outside of the top 200. So
dang. All right.
Give him a pass on last year. He just never was healthy. He had the turf toe injury in spring training.
He's always healthy though. He just had one unhealthy season and we're going to write him off.
Exactly. So I think you can pencil him in for 30 homers. You can pencil him in for, you know, a 260-ish batting average, not helpful, but won't kill you.
Steals 10 bags, too.
And yeah, hopefully we'll steal some bases. I worry about that with the knee and the toe injury last year. But even if he doesn't, he's a steal at his value.
All right, why don't you give us number 3 and number 2 now, Chris?
Yeah, let's go with Shin-Soo Choo.
Yeah,
who's
baby.
Kind of Ryan Braun-y. And then Garrett Hampson, another guy. The Rockies have too many guys. You know, even in the minors, they've got a couple of guys who... Brendan Rodgers wasn't great last year dealing with a shoulder injury, but he could be the shortstop of the future. There's this guy, Ryan Vilott. He had a really good year in the minors. I'm drafting him in all my dynasty leagues if I can. But if Garrett Hampson gets an opportunity, he is not as good as Trey Turner, but it wouldn't shock me to see 90% of Trey Turner's production from him, given that he has Coors Field backing him up.
280 batting average, 30 stolen bases, 10, 15 homers,
mm-hmm.
and all the runs and RBIs from being with Colorado. Yeah, everyone I talked to last year this time, everyone would come on my show and they would mention Garrett Hampson. And it just didn't work out because Colorado screwed us. But you're right. He's one of these perfect post-hype guys that if he finally gets in the lineup, look out. He's going to help your fantasy team.
Exactly.
And Chu is he's exactly like Ryan Braun. 260, 265, 20 homers, 15 steals, each and every year. Lots of runs, too.
There were 12 players who had 24 home runs and 15 stolen bases last year, and pretty much all of them are going inside the top 100, except I believe it's Yasiel Puig, who doesn't have a team, but probably would be a top 100 player if he did, and Shin-Soo Choo, who is
ADP 228, ECR 199, so 30 picks higher is what the experts are suggesting. All right, and here is my number 1. Hopefully it's not yours. I feel bad if I steal it. But this is my guy. This is my number 1 guy that I have to have on every team, not just outfield, every position. I want Avisail Garcia.
Okay. I like it.
Yeah, you look at what he's done the last couple of years in Chicago and Tampa Bay. I mean, he batted 330 in 2017, right? 18 homers in 2018, 19 homers last year, 20 homers in Tampa, 10 stolen bases, batted 282. Oh yeah, by the way, that was in 125 games. All of his batted ball metrics, like if you just look at guys who hit the ball 110 miles per hour, Avisaíl García, 1.6 percentage of his pitches, that's higher than Pete Alonso, Jorge Soler, Nelson Cruz, Ronald Acuna, all of these guys. The guy just crushes. He was just in Tampa, and now he's in Miller Park. He could bat 320 with 25, 30 homers.
100%. Yeah, that's a great call. I'm a little bit concerned about playing time because it does sound like...
Me too. Oh, it's going to kill me if they don't play him all the time.
Well, just because Kane's going to play as much as he can. Yelich is going to play every day. Braun is going to play first base, but, you know, the last time they tried to make him play first base...
Well, also, they got Justin Smoke, who I love, too.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's... Smoke, Braun, and García are all real sleepers for me. I did a position preview series, and I picked a sleeper breakout and bust for each position. I wrote Justin Smoke originally, and then I had to go back, and I looked at the playing time, and I was like, oh, Ryan Braun's probably going to play a lot of first base. So I just put Ryan Braun in as my sleeper for first base.
Yeah, Smoke's not as good against left-handed pitchers as he is against righties, obviously. And Ryan Braun's amazing face lefties. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to draft Braun, Smoke, and García. And so I've got two great players every single day. All right, who's your number one for us?
I would have a much stronger opinion about Alex Verdugo if he wasn't dealing with a back injury that had prevented him from playing baseball since last August, which seems like a really bad sign, both for his fantasy prospects and for the Red Sox, who, you know, gave up a future Hall of Famer for him. But once he's healthy, if he does get healthy, I think he's a future batting title champion in Boston. I think...
I said when he got traded, he's Michael Brantley 2.0. Michael Brantley's a good player.
Yeah, I mean, he struck out 49 times in 106 games in the majors last season. He hit 294. And he's going to, outside of Coors Field, the best park for batting average in baseball. You know, Fenway Park, it's a tough park, especially for left-handed power. I think we're starting to kind of see the impact that that park has had on Andrew Benintendi. But if Verdugo sticks with his line drive approach, I think the power will come. You're talking, you know, not 30 homers, but 20. But he could hit 300 every year. If he was healthy, I think he'd be a top 100 pick right now because he's probably going to hit at the top of what should still be a really good Red Sox lineup. It's not going to be as good, but this was a lineup that created so much volume for Mookie Betts. If Alex Verdugo's at the top of that lineup, hitting in front of Xander Bogaerts and Rafael Devers and JD Martinez, there is, you know, 700 plate appearance potential, and that is going to be hugely valuable with his batting average. And especially, you know, we don't take into account the impact of volume on batting average as much as we might need to. But, you know, in your roto league, if you have a guy who can hit 305, get a ton of plate appearances, and in his case, Verdugo's, he's not really going to walk all that much. So those are just at bats, basically. You know, he might walk 50 to 60 times, but that's just going to be a ton of at-bats that are going to boost his impact on your batting average as well.
It's a great call. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and he's another one of these guys. ADP 215, ECR 193, and I see Justin Upton right ahead of him. ADP 211, ECR 179, all the guys we're mentioning, every other expert I've talked to seems to be in line with us. There's some good values in outfield, so... What is your strategy with outfield? Do you prefer to wait since there's so many values that we like, or are you just taking it as it comes and filling in later?
We just did our outfield previews for fantasy baseball today, and I'm a bit too much like a kid in a candy store when it comes to outfield. Like, I get so excited. I see so many guys early on, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to take Cody Bellinger with my number 4 overall pick, and then Aaron Judge is there at 30th, and it just, like, all of a sudden I get to, like, the 90th pick, and I want to take a Nick Castellanos, but I have 3 outfielders already, and it's like, do I want to fill up?
I'm just taking a bunch of starting pitchers early this year, so I don't have to worry about that, because there's value I like everywhere. Like, second base, you can get Starlin Castro really late. He's going to hit 25 bombs.
I need to be a bit more judicious when it comes to that, and You know, I used to be kind of a zealot when it came to waiting on starting pitcher. I've definitely softened my stance over the last couple of years, and especially this year.
Well, it was a lot easier when we had Tyler Glass now and Blake Snell and Shane Bieber. Who are those guys this year? I don't see them. Julio Urias, he's the only guy I can think of.
There's some guys that I like for sure. I actually just did two pieces for CBSSports.com. Guys with ADPs between 200 and 300 that I like starting pitchers, and then guys after 300. A lot of it depends on who fills out rotation spots. Like if Alex Wood's in the Red Sox, in the Dodgers rotation, I really like him. If Josh James gets that fifth spot for the Astros.
Josh James for the Astros, Alex Reyes for the Cards. Yeah.
Mitch Keller, Brendan McKay. There's a lot of guys. Mitch Keller, especially the Pirates, seem to have realized that it's 2020 and they're not just trying to throw sinkers low in the zone with every pitch. So, you know, there was actually a story with Mitch Keller on MLB.com recently where he talked about, you know, I just got too predictable with my fastball. I threw my fastball. He threw his fastball like 65%, 70% of the time. You can't really, unless you've got just an unhittable fastball, you can't really work that way in the majors in 2020. There's too many guys with too much power. Your fastball's going to get rocked. So, you know, the Pirates have gotten, you know, I think they've got a young pitching coach who is, you know, more analytically savvy. So it does sound like they're going to do a better job of mixing their pitches up. It's not going to be all.
Yeah, like Chris Archer finally, you know, doing his thing, going back to doing his thing. That's why I'm drafting him late.
I had three Pirates in those two columns. It was Mitch Keller, Joe Musgrove, and Chris Archer.
Yeah. Well, did you put Dylan Bundy in there? I'm all aboard the Dylan Bundy train this year.
I've been hurt too many times by Dylan Bundy.
I will live and die with him and Chris Archer this year, no doubt about it.
I can see it. I can definitely see it. And if he has a good spring, I'm going to buy in. And his first start was really good. So we'll see.
Sure.
I'm not sure.
All right, Chris. Well, that's all for today's show. Really appreciate you taking the time to come on. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was great.
Hey, if you guys don't already, give Chris a follow on Twitter. At CTowersCBS, I'm at Bobby Fantasy Pro, and don't forget to check out our draft assistant at fantasypros.com/draftwizard. It is really cool when you can sync it with your live draft. Again, that's fantasypros.com/draftwizard. For Chris Towers, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your baseball.